Welcome to another edition of Conversations of the Heart. As always, it is your boy T-Till. Very, very special guest in the building, Mr. Fletcher Cleaves. How you doing today, sir?
Can't complain. Just a little razzle-dazzle going on. Trying to come out with great energy today.
Yes, sir. So I'm not going to tell his story, but what I will tell you is that he is a motivational speaker, you know, has shared his testimony across multiple platforms across the world. He's been seen on ESPN, you know, College Game Day, over 400 high schools, colleges and businesses. He has the nickname of the wheelchair nomad, and we'll get into that in a few minutes. But he travels the world, you know, traveled to many countries, right? Living life and things like that. And he discusses various issues, and we're going to get into what those are in a second. But for the people who don't know you, Fletcher, just tell them a little bit about yourself. Who are you? And tell them just a little bit about your journey, man.
Okay, absolutely. So let me say a little bit. I'll keep it brief and high level, so to speak. But my name is Fletcher Cleaves, born and raised in Memphis, Tennessee. And, you know, I was blessed enough to be physically gifted on the football field. And I was blessed enough to receive a football scholarship in 2009. You know, just after everything I had been through throughout the younger tenure of my career, with being told you're too small to play high school, you're too small to play you'll never start at varsity, you'll never get a scholarship, you won't play collegiate ball. And I had proved so many doubters wrong, so I just continuously to strive and do that throughout my whole life. And I did that all the way up to college, and I was able to obtain a football scholarship and a roster spot as a true freshman. And it was a great time to be Fletcher Cleaves at the time. You know, it was, you know, school's going, I'm in classes about a week or two. You know, girls know my name around campus. I'm feeling good about myself. And, but unfortunately, on September 10th, 2009, my roommate and I were leaving Buffalo Wild Wings, getting prepared to watch the first NFL game of the season. And a lady was texting and driving, not paying attention on the road. And she ran us off the road, causing us to flip into an embankment. The car flipped into the ditch, and once the car flipped into the ditch, it landed upside down and caved the roof in. And when that roof caved in, it broke my neck in two places. Huh. And it just knocked me unconscious and paralyzed me immediately. My roommate was ejected from the vehicle. He faced his own troubles and physical difficulties, but it brought us here today. And as you mentioned, I just have continuously strived and wanted to prove people wrong and just let them know that adversity happens to everybody, man, but it's not what happens to you that defines you. It's how you respond to it. So I chose to respond in a positive manner, and I did so many unbelievable things throughout this journey of becoming a quadriplegic, and Bruce brings us here today.
Now listen, first off, hats off to you, man, because to be honest with you, you know, to go through everything of what you just outlined in a very, very, very briefly, and we're going to touch on it in detail in just a second, but to go through everything that you've been through and to come out now and you're a motivational speaker, like that in and of itself is wild. And we'll get into how you came to that point in a second, but just salute to you for your resiliency, because that is, I mean, people go through less, and you know, and I'm not, you know, saying, you know, I'm not comparing anybody's stories, but it's just people go through less, man, and having them out on top like you, man. So just, you know, just salute to your resiliency. So you get into this car accident, and I assume you just wake up in the hospital, right?
No, that's not how it went, man. Believe it or not, I graduated May 2009, right?
Right.
So in high school, I drove a 1988 Suzuki Samurai. Uh-huh. So it's like a little Jeep, right? You know, the doors off, but in 1988, and I didn't have any power steering. So I'm learning, it's a stick, so I'm learning how to drive and learning how to drive a stick at the same time. Wow. So I'm like, all right, do the clutch, hit the gas, put it in first, shift to second, put my blinker on, but look at my blind, you know, I'm trying to learn both. But the power steering, I think, as looking at hindsight of 2020, it just conditioned me to turn the wheel harder than normal, than my My parents always told me, he was like, hey, if you get a full scholarship, we will get you a car for graduation. Because my dad was like, you know, I'd rather pay for a car than pay for 4 years of tuition. You know, a car is going to be way less, right? So that gave me a little like 1999 Honda Accord, but you know, 18 years young, I'm just happy to have some wheels, right? I'm just happy to be moving and grooving.
It's a classic car,
And
too.
it's a nice car. It was purple. I call it Purple Rain. So long story short, to get to your question, the lady's coming towards us, and just as I've been driving to high school, I had got the car in June. The car crash happened in June, September, and I just overcorrected. I jerked the wheel too hard, spun out of control, hit the rail. Once we hit the rail, and the roof caved in and knocked me unconscious. My roommate was ejected, as I mentioned, and playing football, we always had to wake up early for like team meetings, receiver meetings, special team meetings at like 5 a.m. So I'm unconscious and I hear him yelling my name like Fletch, Fletch. In my mind, I thought we were like late for practice. So I'm like, what? And he was like, are you all right? And I'm laying on my right side and I try to turn over, but I'm trapped. And I'm like, oh, dude, like I'm stuck in this car. Like I'm still in this car and we, you know, in a car crash. And my first thought in my mind was like, my parents are finna kill. Like, I just got this car. Like, they
Oh,
finna, it's gonna be over, you know. But not knowing that was the least of my worries, right?
man.
And so he tells me, like, Fletch, I gotta go get help. I gotta go get help. I'm bleeding pretty bad. And I realized that I was like, wait on me. I was like, wait on me. And I kept saying, I'm stuck. He was like, Fletch, I gotta go. I gotta go. And I started crying because I was like, dang, please don't leave me down there. I don't want to, please don't leave me down here by myself. I don't want to die, bro. I don't want to die. He was like, Fletch, I gotta go get help. I gotta go get help. So he goes, he climbs back up this hill, with his arm pretty, and his arm was in bad shape, you know. And but he said he felt like an angel was pushing him up the hill. So the angel pushes him up, you know, from his side of the story. I'm trapped in the vehicle. I'm trying to maneuver my way out. I'm not really moving. But then, you know, he flags down, you know, like some of those people that patrol parking lots and golf carts with those little yellow lights. Yeah, he flags down one of those people. They call 911, and then the ambulance comes and does their thing. And I remember laying on my back, and the EMT's telling me, she says, you know, do you know where you are? What's your name? How old are you? What's your address? What's the day of the week? And I'm getting all these answers right, all these questions right. And then she says, I want you to move your right leg. I said, okay. Then she says, move your right leg. I said, I did. And she was like, all right, move your left leg. And I moved my left leg and she asked me again. I said, I did. She was like, all right. At that time, I knew something was wrong because she kept asking me to do stuff that, you know, I'm thinking I'm doing. And I asked her, I said, you know what, give it to me straight. And because I thought like both my legs were broken or like something's wrong, like, you know, something's not right. So I was like, give it to me straight. And she goes, I'll never forget. She says, well, you look fine. I was like, really? She was like, yeah, you're just super muddy. Like, you don't have any visible broken bones. You look normal. I was like, okay, that's good. She's like, but I think you have a spinal cord injury. I was like, oh.
So, all right, perfect. So you find out that you have, now you get to the hospital and then you find out that you have a spinal cord in injury, correct?
Yes, sir.
So when you get the news, right? So when you get the news that you have a spinal cord injury, now was it immediate, like you're paralyzed, or was it like, well, we got to run some more tests and then see, and we'll go from there?
No, it was immediate. Like, yeah, he's paralyzed for sure.
Wow. Jeez. Okay.
You
So.
know, like being 18, man, you know, like I said, I had just graduated high school. I really didn't have any real responsibilities. Like I tell people all the time, at that moment in my life, it was school, football, girls in that order. Like that's the only thing that mattered. So of course, when they told me I was paralyzed, my first thought it was like, I'm not gonna go to practice. I'm not gonna be able to practice in the morning. Not knowing like this is a whole different type of ordeal I'm faced with for the rest of my life.
Wow, man. And at 18 years old, look, that's hard for anybody to process. I don't care how old you are. But at 18 years old, I assume that you had your parents with you and stuff like that.
Absolutely.
What? And I know your immediate thing was like, I can't practice anymore. But once you got the actual, like, it sunk in, like, I may not or can't walk ever again. What did you think about that? Like, how did that hit you? Because sometimes things hit us delayed, right?
Yeah, okay. Absolutely.
Can't practice anymore, but now we're talking not just practice, but walking and doing all of the normal things that you, all of us take for granted, right? Like when did that hit?
I would say like the first couple of days, like, so I was already in the hospital 10 days, which is phenomenal for the type of injury I went through. So throughout the 10 days of in the hospital, you know, I just was extremely optimistic. And like I said, I really didn't know much about it. So I'm like, you know what? Like, they don't know who I am. Like, I've been resilient my whole life. Like, I'll get over this. I'll be probably walking in a year and back on the field in 2 years, right? You know, so, you know, I'm like, man, they don't know what the doctor know what they're talking about. But then I went to the Shepherd Center in Atlanta, Georgia, which is one of the top rehabilitation centers for spinal cord injuries in the country.
Mm-hmm.
And that's when it sunk in. It was like, all right, this might be a long-term deal. Like, they kind of put it in perspective of what I'm going to be faced with and what I have to do and how do I need to recover and all that stuff. So that's when it actually sunk in. But, you know, of course, you're going to feel some type of sadness or disappointment or, you know, anger. But that didn't last too long in my life. I'll say I was probably feeling those emotions for maybe 24 hours. But then I realized, like, hey, Fletch, it ain't no point of crying over spilled milk. What you going to do to get over it? Like, that football mentality immediately kicked in. It's like, next man up, you know. And I tell this all the time in the mental health culture that's taken about now. It might not have been a good thing to tell us back then, but like, I remember vividly that my football coach telling us, like, nobody cares what you're going through. Nobody cares that your girlfriend broke up with you. Nobody cares. What are you going to do today to build a better, you know, like those pregame speeches. So that mindset or that speech went through my head immediately. It was like, dude, nobody cares you're in a wheelchair. Nobody cares. People only, you know, people are busy, you in the hospital, right? And, you know, 5 years from now, what is your legacy going to be? Is it going to be the football star that became paralyzed and was never heard from again? Or the guy who became paralyzed and grabbed life by the balls and just did everything he could to overcome adversity?
Oh, wow. So hindsight, like you said, with mental health and everything else of what we know now, right? Because back then, I feel like it wasn't so prevalent now. As it probably should have been back in the day, right? Especially with men, you know, because men
Black
suffer,
men, sure.
Especially, right? I mean, we suffer in silence. We men have two times double the suicide rates as women, right? Do you think, now that you know what you know about mental health, do you think you've processed your past? Like, do you think you processed that whole situation fully and grieved what you lost? Or did you just make the switch and just, it is what it is?
Yeah, I definitely made the switch and like, it is what it is and how you're going to get over it. Gotcha. But as far as grieving, I've never been a type of grievance individual. Like, you know, it's just how I was raised and just, man, this is what it is. You can't change it. Okay, it's all right to, you know, maybe cry a day or two, but eventually it's like, all right, life goes on. You need to, you know, see what you're going to do, what's next, right? So right. Whether it was, you know, failing a test in high school or not making a starting position in college or whatever the case may be, I was like, damn, now what do I have to do to make sure this don't happen again? Or what do I need to do to get over this?
Right.
So yeah. I think that's the same mentality I took with dealing with this spinal cord injury.
Understood. Your parents, though. Parents, what I've realized is when you are a caretaker, your view of things are very different than the actual patient, right? Mm-hmm. From your knowledge, how did your parents take this? They're mama bears. They get scared. They, you know what I'm saying? Like, you know, fathers may not show their emotion, but sometimes they could be, you know, shook too with certain things, man. Yeah. But like, how did your parents, like, how do they approach this situation with you? Especially the car gone, you know, but the car's not important. And the car's not important at this point, right? How do they approach it with you?
My family's always dealt with using humor to get over a lot of situations. But, you know, as you mentioned, you know, the mama bear has always been the type of figure to nurturing and all that stuff. But during this situation, it was the exact opposite. My pops took it the hardest, man, because I'm an only child, and he never missed, like my dad never missed like any practice, football. Every game I've had since Pop Warner, my dad has been at every single one of them. I'm talking about at every sport, from baseball to soccer to basketball, community center, little league, all that stuff, right? Of course, you know, my mom came. She wasn't really the sports figure, so she came to like senior night, homecoming, big games, right?
Yep. You know? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but like away games and stuff like that, and all of my mom wasn't really coming to those.
Bad, yeah.
So my pops, you know, and it consists of this in my book. They each have a chapter of just how the emotions they went through finding out their only son is now paralyzed. But after talking to him and listening to a couple of interviews he did, you know, he was like, I've watched my only kid, you know, my only child, my baby boy, accomplish so much. And to the doctor to tell me that he'll never be able to walk again, he was like, that was like a knife to the heart. It was like, I'm used to seeing him running and jumping and playing and getting in trouble and all that stuff. And so my pops took it the hardest. And like to this day, as I've been paralyzed coming up on, was it 14 years almost? Yeah, September next month, it'll be 14 years, I believe. And if he's in a in the audience in a presentation, he still cries. Yeah. It's like I'll look in the audience of 3,000 and look at my pops and like he's over there bawling. I'm like, dude, you've heard this story 50 times. Like, he's still crying.
Yeah. The one thing, from what I understand, you know, mom always tells me, she's like, you'll never understand until.
Until you have kids, yeah.
Until you have kids. And she's like, it's emotional. It's different. It hits different. And from a caretaker's perspective, you feel helpless. And I think that's one of the things where it's just like, I wish it was me instead of him or her, right? Like, it's hard to watch the people you love suffer. And even if they don't appear to be suffering, it's still hard to watch the person that once was. And that's what I mean by the grieving process. And not necessarily for you, but even for a caretaker, they grieve the relationship or what that person was before. Even if they're still alive, they appreciate that the person is still alive, of course, but they go through so many emotions of what was, especially if it's a parent to a son, a parent to a daughter, and vice versa. Once you start to see your parents change and get sick, God forbid, and they get different, you become the caretaker. Your eyes see it so differently because you start to grieve of what they were, and it's like it's different, man. It's different.
And that's exactly what made me want to be so independent and be like fulfilled and do so much, because watching my parents just go through the rigorous of taking care of me. You know, of course, I was 19. Now I'm 19 at the time. And just, you know, I'm still learning my body, and they're helping me get dressed, and they're putting me in the car and breaking my chair down, and just watching them go through their process. And then hearing like my mom like breaking my chair down. She get in the car and she's like, my back is killing me, you know, and watching my dad get me dressed and his knees are hurting, and just because, you know, or his back is hurting because he's bending over in the bed, you know, putting my shirt on and stuff like that. Or they're waking up early at 5 a.m. to help me get dressed for an 8 a.m. class, you know. And I was like, dude, you got to move out, get your stuff together. So, because you're killing your parents, man. Like they're literally withering away trying to take care of you, and that's what the mentality I had.
Wow, man, and that's that in of itself is amazing, because here you are, you're in a situation that you never asked for. You know, you're in this particular position. You can't walk anymore. It's not your fault, and you sitting here thinking about them and their aches and their pains. And the importance of getting back to your independence in a new way, right? So you say, you know what? Cool, this happened. So when did you begin that college journey? I know you went to the University of Memphis, right? So
correct.
So how long, you know, between the accident instance and when did you start college?
Yeah, so the car crash happened in September of 2009. I was in the hospital 10 days. So I went to like the Shepherd Center in Atlanta, Georgia, like the 19th to 20th, somewhere around there. And then I was there from September 20th to, I want to say, the next, so like September, October, November, December, January, like almost a year, like a year and a half. So I'm in therapy about a year and a half. So of June 2011, I want to say, is when I started. I was like, let me just take one class in the summer to see, how it's going to be being in my chair and push it on campus. And I just took one class during that summer, and then that next spring, I had a full schedule. And there I graduated in 4 years and got a degree in computer science.
Man, that's amazing, man. That's super amazing. And so now, college graduate, new life, right? Completely new life. And now it's like, now let me ask you this. Now, I know like you were the baller, your football, like star and things like that. Did people know you in college? Like when you went to college and things like that?
Yeah, because it was my hometown, so a lot of kids went to home and school. And I'm from Memphis, University of Memphis. So of course, you got a lot of kids like, oh, Fletch. It was some people that didn't even know I was in a wheelchair. Like I would be in the UC or the camp on campus chilling, and somebody was like, Fletch, what the hell? Why are you in a wheelchair? I was like, oh yeah, I was in a car accident last year. And I was like, no, like for real? So a bad situation, but I just still had, I was blessed enough to be a beacon of light prior to my car crash. And people just gravitate towards me. I've always been told I had great energy and I was a people person. I had so many friends. So making friends, even wheelchair or not, wasn't hard for me at all. And just people just helped me so much. Man, if you need something, let me know. I remember when we was in high school, you helped me with my math test. I remember you took up for me. It was a time I got suspended in 8th grade. It was just because it was two guys just beating up one guy. And I didn't know what they was fighting for. I just didn't like it. So I jumped in. Yeah. I just
Now
didn't like
you
it.
But now the tables have turned and you've reaped what you sowed, on a good level. It's that good karma, man. Man, so all right. So now you still got friends, you still got a good village, you still got good family, graduate college. And now you begin working, right? So what made you say, hey, look, I'm working, got my degree. I'm good. I'm in a good place. I'm probably on my own at the time now. Like you're moving and grooving. What made you want to flip the switch to become a motivational speaker? And literally, you've been across the United States. Like you've been featured, right? On various networks, right? So what was that switch like? When did you decide to make that switch?
Yeah, so I've always been goal oriented. So, and I just think it's have this weird condition with school. Like the objective, you're in the 1st grade, the objective is to make it to the 2nd grade. Second grade, objective make it to the 3rd grade, so on and so forth. And then you get 12th grade, you like go to college. Now it's freshman and senior. So my sophomore year, that was like internship was a big thing. So I was like, let me just get some internships. So boom, I got an internship, my 10th grade and 11th grade, two different companies, St. Jude Research Children's Hospital here in Memphis and AutoZone headquarters here in Memphis. I do phenomenally well. AutoZone offered me a full-time position my junior year, like even before I graduated. I was like, I still got a year of college left. I was like, we don't care. Just graduate and you got a job. So my senior year, I'm like, I'm barely paying attention. I'm literally just trying to graduate because I already got a job, right? And so once I graduated and I began working and doing the 9 to 5, I didn't have much to look forward to anymore. Like I would wake up in the morning, go to work, and then when I come home, there was no more homework. There was no more projects. There was no more need to study. So I had so much free time. Like after 5 o'clock, I was like, dude, I'm bored out of my mind from 5, 8 p.m. until. So I was like, I just started volunteering and doing different things. And I remember that somebody asked me, hey, my high school team has a big game coming up. Do you mind giving a pregame speech to the football team? I'm like, yeah, no problem. And this time I was still in college. So this is before I graduated. And I was like, yeah, no, sure, no problem. And I go out there and I do my thing. And I'm like, hey, as you can see, tomorrow's never promised. Go out there, give it your all, ball out, right? Someone's like, that was a phenomenal speech. Can you come give your testimony to my youth group? I do that. Then it was like somebody in the crowd was like, can you come speak to my entire 8th grade? Then somebody was like, can you come speak to my 9th grade? Can you come speak to the senior class? And one high school, AT&T, was in the audience because, as y'all mentioned, my car crash happened because a lady was distracted driving. So it was like AT&T was putting on this event, and that with the goggles and the machine and getting kids to walk the line and all that fun stuff. And I gave my little testimony. I'm newly a presenter. I'm reading off a piece of paper. I haven't, you know, I'm just going out there and telling my testimony. AT&T rep says, "Hey, you have a great testimony. Let's stay in contact." A year later, the guy reaches back out. He was like, "Hey, I just got a call with ESPN. They're looking for an athlete that's been affected by distracted driving. They want to make a commercial for you." And once that commercial aired, it just kind of took off. So the commercial aired, and then I started speaking at high schools in surrounding areas. Like, it expanded from just Memphis to like Arkansas, Louisiana. And then the better I perfected my craft, I started recording. Social media became a thing. And now I'm on planes at Ohio State and California. And now we're here today.
Wow, man. That is incredible, man. That is that's a crazy chain of events, to be honest with you, man. But
exactly.
Nobody deserves more. And
I appreciate it.
So now I know your mentality. I know your mentality is just to get the past, keep going, you know, don't worry about it. Mm-hmm. Right. But for the woman, right, that caused the incident, right? Mm-hmm. Have you spoken to her ever since that point, since that part, since the accident? Like, have you actually had a chance to sit down with her, speak to her, and have that conversation?
No, man, I've never met her. So, as I mentioned, I swerved to miss her, and she never stopped. So technically, it was a one-car accident. She never stopped. She kept going. I've never met her, but you know that image or her face has been, you know, burned in my head forever. Like if I see her in like Walmart, I'm like, that's the lady. Like I'll never forget her face, like, you know. But, like you said, that's what's like her and her God. I try not to think about it because, you get angry and all. Like, why? First of all, why weren't you paying attention? Second of all, why didn't you stop? Because I know you saw us fly up that road, you know. Right. And then forensics did their thing, and you know, of course, they weren't able to find much. So, it is what it is, man.
That's crazy. And the passenger, like your friend, you know, not going to get too much into his story, but is he good?
He's great. He's great. He had, his arm was pretty badly mangled, but he had to have like two or three surgeries on his arm. But he has full function. If he wears a long sleeve shirt, you wouldn't be able to tell anything. But if he wears a short sleeve, you'd be like, "Damn, what happened to you?" You know, like it's visible. You know,
right.
But like I mentioned, I just left DC. He just got married this past weekend. I was the best man at his wedding.
And congratulations to him. And I'm glad that he and him for the most part is good.
For sure,
man. So like looking at your life now, all over TV, all over social media, speaking to hundreds and thousands of people, right, in this current state that you're in, right, and in your trajectory before the accident was football star, right? And it's hard to say, hey, if you know, I would be going to the NFL and going that way, right, man? But where you're at right now, right, it's like your trajectory, I won't say it's almost, it could be almost the same, right? Like, but in your career, you're top of your career. Like when it comes to speaking, like when it comes to motivating, when it comes to being impactful, right? You're still booked. Like you're on planes, like you just said, you're on planes. Like you're going and you're moving and shaking. You're still getting the bag. Right. Mm-hmm. And not that money is important, because I know in football, you probably, with your mentality, you probably would have been incredible with that too, man. But the impact that you're probably having on people, like right now, it's like amazing. Right. And you took the time to write a book also. So you're an author too.
Yes, sir. Right?
And you accomplished so much. I was obviously, well, within the last 10 years or so of your life, you've done a lot with your life. I want to get into the book a little bit. The name of the book is "The Sky Is Not the Limit: The Fletcher Cleave Story." Right?
Correct. Correct. So
So what made you write this book?
Yeah, so people always, in the beginning, day one, you should write a book, you should write a book. But like when I first started speaking, you should write a book. So man, I ain't writing no book. I'm just out here just doing God's work and just doing my thing and just speaking, right? But then as things continue to grow, you get some more prestigious opportunities of speaking, like at your in California's and your conferences now, and in LA's and you're big, you're New York. And he always hear like, "Do you have a book?" And it was like, "No, I don't." I was like, "You should have, And it was like, "You should have a book. We would love to purchase or put it in our library or whatever." And then I just started taking the time and like, "All right, what's next for Fletcher? I'm speaking. I'm on planes. Like I said, I always have to have something to reach for, goal oriented. So I was like, let me write a book." So I worked on that for like 7, 8 months and published it and became an Amazon bestseller author within the first 3 days.
Within
Like it was a
first
tremendous.
3 days. Oh, I'd be clear. He said, not a week, not a month, at the first 3 days.
Yeah, man, because I put out an email to all the people I had spoken to over the past, umpteen years, 5, 6, 10 years, or whatever time frame it was. I was like, "Hey, I do have a book now, and I would love your support." And people remember it how people will always, Maya Angelou said it, like people will forget what you said, and people will forget what you did, but people will never forget how you made them feel. So it was like, I don't remember what that guy said, but I remember he was a great speaker. So once I sent the email out, people just start supporting it, and I became top 10 within, 72 hours.
Man, well, first of all, again, congratulations. It's beautiful. And I implore everybody to go out and support and continue to get this book. So the one thing that you mentioned was faith, right? Of course, your drive, your perseverance, you being a sports person. So, just that drive is in you already, man. But how has faith played an intricate role in this journey of yours and all of the twists and the turns, right? Like, how has faith played an intricate part in your life?
It has a big part, man, because all this stuff is not just happening by chance. It's not just a coincidence. I feel, I call God Big G. So I'm like, Big G has a plan for, everything that's been laid out. And as you mentioned a few minutes ago, it's like, of course, I wanted to be the football star, and how would my life have been different? And it is in the beginning, of course, for all selfish reasons, it's like, Fletch, you're touching so many lives, you're impacting so many people, but it's like, yeah, but I don't want to be in a wheelchair. Like, if I could take it back, I'd rather not impact those people and walk. But then that was just a selfish, me wanting to be, quote unquote, for lack of a better term, normal again. And but then I realized, like, this must be a plan or a greater outcome, or somebody must be orchestrating everything that's going through my life right now. So, maybe take the wheelchair so you can, help millions of people. It's either, no wheelchair and help 3 people, or like wheelchair and help millions of people. And God decided to make me, a beacon of his light.
Wow, that's an amazing perspective, man. So I want to talk a little bit about overcoming adversity. So this whole story is about overcoming adversity, right? But what advice would you give to someone? And they may not even be in your situation, but someone that's going through a hard time in life and they're struggling to get through it. So what would be the advice that Fletcher would say, hey, look, this is what I would tell you to assist you and to help you and to motivate you to get through something.
I would say, like, look here, man. No matter what you're going through in life, I've never seen a cloud sit over one person's house for an extended amount of time. So what that means is this too shall pass. Like, it might storm for 2 weeks straight, but eventually that sun gonna come out. It's gonna be a glorious day. And no matter what you're going through, everybody goes through something. But it's not what happens to you that defines you. As you can contest, crappy stuff happens to everybody. Everybody's listening. You just said, your mom has had a stroke in previous years, or so to speak. Everybody's going through something, but it's not what happens to you that defines you. It's how you respond to it. How are you going to respond when you don't get that job you've always wanted? How are you going to respond when you go through a divorce? How are you going to respond when you don't get the grades you always wanted to, or you don't get into the college you always wanted to get into? You know, adversities come in one shape, form, or another, but it's not what happens to you that defines you. And it's how you respond to it. And I chose to respond in a positive manner and always look as the glass being half full. And understand that, you know, with Glorilla, the rapper from Memphis said, something like the sun gonna shine, but that's why I love tomorrow. You know, it's like tomorrow's, you know, even though tomorrow's never promised, but it gives us an opportunity to try again and to have a better day. And I tell people all the time, like, the goal in the morning is to have a good day. Just wake up, start off with positive affirmation, whether it's you look good today. Look in the mirror and just tell yourself you look good. Today gonna be a great day. We're going to get it. We're going to get to the bag. We're going to do whatever you have to say to pump yourself up to have a great day. And if you do that every day, you have a great day, then you have another great day. You'll have a great week. And enough great weeks turn into a great year. And if you have enough great years, you'll have a great life.
Man, that's powerful, man. One, I see why you do what you do, man, for sure. You got a nickname, man, the Wheelchair Nomad. Man, how did that come? Like, where did that come from? How did that come up, man? What happened there?
Yeah, man. So, flex being flex. You know, I'm newly injured, watching all my friends enjoy being college freshmen because, you know, I missed my whole year of freshman school.
Yeah.
And in therapy. So, I'm on Facebook, you know, making progress updates. Hey, learning how to put my shirt on today. And, of course, Fletch, we love you, man. We're praying for you. And then I'm scrolling through Facebook, and I see them all in Panama Beach and spring break and all of these fun activities and doing stuff. I'm like, y'all ain't finna leave me. I want to go too. So I tell myself, what do I need to do to get to a position where I'm able to travel? Like I said, me being very goal-oriented. I was like, all right, if you want to be away from your caregivers for a steady amount of time, you need to learn how to do X, Y, and Z. So boom, work on X, knock that out, work on Y, knock that out, work on Z, knock that out. And long story short, I go back to college and it's a spring break. I'm like, hey, y'all, like, you know, that was like, hey, let's go to Nashville with Fletch. You know, he's never been away from his parents, and it's only a 3-hour drive. So we go to Nashville, we kick it, and we're not even really doing nothing. We just in the mall, going to the movies, going to restaurants. We not even old enough to drink. We not even drinking. We just playing Uno. We got board games in the hotel. We just hitting the hotel pool. So it was just that energy and that feeling. So like a normal I was 20, but a normal college kid again. Made me like, well, this is exciting just to be around my peers and have a good time. So we do Nashville, then we do Mardi Gras. Then Mardi Gras, you know, we ball out of Mardi Gras having a fantastic time. And then we do Dallas. Like, we rented a 15-passenger van, and it's 12 of us. And we went to Mardi Gras. Then next year, we go to Dallas and go to Six Flags and Papa Do's and all this. You know, we just kicking it and just being, at the time, 21, 22, 23-year-olds. Just enjoying life, man. And then, you know, someone was like, hey, yo, like, we think we could do a plane? Yeah, we hit Vegas. And we're like, okay, that wasn't too bad. We hit the taste of Chicago. We hit Miami, South Beach. And then after, you know, then it just started to, we hit Vegas again. So then I look at my financial, you know, my financials. I'm like, dude, you've been to Vegas twice this year and Miami twice this year. How much is a flight to Italy? I looked that up. I'm like, damn, it's not that bad. So I go to Italy, then I go to Paris, and I go to London, and I fall in love with the different cultures and different how people, like me being an extrovert and a people person. I'm like, man, this is dope. Like, y'all eat this, y'all do this, y'all move like this, like just people and all, and like how they're different black people, how black people move in Paris, how black people move in London, how black people move in Rome. And I'm just loving it, and I'm falling in love with all of it. So I just continuously travel. And I started making posts about my travels. And, you know, I was going everywhere all the time, from domestic to international. And somebody was like, you're like a nomad. Like, you're always gone. Fletch always gone. You're like a nomad. And me being the jokester I am, I was like, yep, you can call me the wheelchair nomad. And it kind of stuck. I just started making posts like the wheelchair nomad. And I joined these different travel groups. And I knew it was taking off when I went to the Taste of Chicago. And my cousins, we go to the Taste, we have a good time. We go into a nightclub. We pull up in front of the nightclub. They put my chair out, pick me up, put me in my chair. There's a line to get into the club. And a lady walks up to me and was like, excuse me, are you the wheelchair nomad? I was like, What? Like, how do you know that? She was like, I'm a part of the travel group. And my cousin said, I see your post. I just want to know you're an inspiration. I was like, oh, yeah, I got to stick with this. So, and
Man.
it just took me.
Man, that's fire, man. Man, and that's how you know that you won, man, because it's like, yo, are you that guy? Like, you him? And you
I'm
like,
like, how do you know that?
I'm him.
Yeah, I'm him.
Yeah, I'm him. Man, that's so amazing, man. And salute to you, man, because yo, listen, me being born and raised in New York City, a lot of people don't even go from Brooklyn to the Bronx. Bronx to Brooklyn, Queens to the Bronx,
For
Manhattan,
sure.
Bronx to Manhattan. That's just a
It's just like
borough.
that in the South. Don't get it up,
Yeah.
you know?
So, and these are people who able-bodied, walking everywhere. Like they don't even like it's just they don't even go anywhere. It's nuts to me, right? But yo, you man, you like you know, wheelchair, no, what? Yo, I'm going. I'm
I'm
rolling.
going.
I
Yep,
love
I'm gonna
that.
see. Is that I want to see what's over there? What they doing over there in Dubai? What they doing over there in Egypt? What's going on in Sweden? I want to know what y'all doing. What y'all food tastes like? And
Yeah.
as you mentioned, like it's crazy, you know, just being in the South and the slower culture, so to speak. I have family members, aunts that, you know, 60 years old, and they literally have never left Memphis. Like they have been in this same 70-mile radius, you know, for 60 years. You know, and it's like,
That's
and then I
crazy.
tell them that I'm like, it is insane. Like, you don't even want to go to Nashville. Like, you don't want to go to New Orleans. You know, and it's just nope. I have no desire. Everything I need is
Right
my.
here.
I grew up right here. My grocery store right here. I get my haircut right here. I'm like, I guess, man, but that's terrible. But they content. They content.
Yeah, whatever makes me happy, man, but not me, not you.
Exactly.
Man. So I wanted to discuss the topic, man, of Texican driving. I'd be lying to you if I said that I never did it. Lying. I'd be absolute liar, right? I can say that I've done it quite a few years. Quite a long time, you know. And just because, and this is even obviously before we even connected. I mean, this is years. Like it's dangerous. I had a friend die because somebody wasn't paying attention to the road. Wasn't texting, but wasn't paying attention to the road and swerved and killed him and his newborn and his fiance. You know, was alive but was severely hurt. People don't understand, right? Just the impact of just being distracted and driving can do, whether you're texting, whatever it is you're doing with your hands, you're not paying attention, whatever that is for you, just being distracted and driving is a severe hazard. And it was a bad habit of mine, like in my 20s. I mean, in my 20s, I was so arrogant.
Oh
I
man, you're not by yourself.
I could do anything. I'm like, me get into an accident, texting and driving, never me.
Never. Yeah,
Never
never
me, bro. Like,
me.
I'm safe. This guy is safe. Not y'all.
Exactly.
Not y'all. Y'all
Y'all
bad.
crazy. I'm
Damn.
safe as you hold a cheeseburger and your boy holds the wheel while you're driving. Hey bro, grab the wheel right quick while I eat this cheeseburger.
And you know, just looking at just even coming out of my 20s, I thank God I was never in an accident. You know, just knowing my habits, what they were in my 20s, right? But being young, because you visit high schools, you visit colleges, you visit a lot of different people from all walks of life, all ages, right? But hitting that 18 to like 25, like that real arrogant stage, right? Talk to the 18 to 25-year-olds about just
Yeah,
being
man, honestly.
distracted and driving, man, please.
Yeah, absolutely. So understand 18, especially males, as you mentioned, we already don't make good decisions anyway. Like, no, men, we mature slower than women, but you know, just that whole group collectively, just that age group is, you know, you think you get it. Like, I get it. You think it's not gonna happen to you? Like, I know what I'm doing. Like, I've been, you know, teenagers or this generation coming up, it's like they've been texting. They've had cell phones since the third, fourth grade. So they've been texting longer than they've been driving. So they like, man, I can text without looking. I can look at the road and send a text or whatever the case may be. But understand this, your brain cannot do two cognitive skills effectively at the same time. Your brain cannot do two things that require it to think simultaneously. What your brain can do is switch between tasks so fast that it gives the illusion that they're happening at the same time. So you might be looking at the road, but are you really paying attention? You're not really focused on driving because you might be looking at the road, looking like, and like, hey, bro, I'll be there. And then you hear the, like, oh, you know, you kind of swerving a little bit. You know, you boom, driving's taking a hit. Or you might be coming up within traffic and a lot of stuff going on, and you might be paying attention while you're trying to text, and you start misspelling words on your text. So, boom, texting's taking a hit. So what they're saying is you can't do two things at once simultaneously. And I do a demonstration during my presentations, and the people that's out there listening, or if you want to give it a try one day, just take two writing, a pen, a piece of paper, two pens, and a piece of paper, and try to write your first name and your last name at the same time with two separate hands. You know, your first name with your left hand, your last name with your right hand at the same time. And watch how, you know, one hand will move and then another hand will move, or both hands will move, but then you're not really writing legibly. And I've had people misspell their own names. And it's like, because your brain's like, I can't do, which one do you want me to do first? I can't do both of these at the same time because it's requiring me to think. And, you know, and I tell teens all the time, it's, you know, I know you said 18 to 25, but let's take it down to like 16 to 25.
Yeah.
Teenagers and young adults are 60% more likely to be involved in a car crash if they're distracted. So if they're doing anything besides paying attention to the road, whether it's eating on the phone, playing with their seat, anything besides driving, you're 60% more likely to be involved in a car crash than if you weren't distracted. And if I told you, T, you were 60% more likely to hit the lottery if you wore a black shirt every day. Well, you wear a black shirt every day, right?
70% of the time, bro. Yeah, my size, 70% of the time in a black shirt. Yeah, 100.
There
yeah.
you go. Like I told you, 60% more likely to whatever you would do, you know, do that. So if I'm telling you 60% more likely to get in a car crash, why would you even do it? You know, that's more than half. If you reduce more than half the percent, if you just, not even just like something hard, just pay attention.
That's a fact, man. And this includes driving impaired, you know, drinking and driving. It includes driving while you're sleepy. I've done, like, honestly, man, drive, and the people, and again, the arrogance of people, right? They work a lot of hours. They've got a lot of stuff going on in life. And they go out and they're like, oh, well, I should be good. I'll drink a Red Bull or tea, whatever.
Let the window down. Turn the air on. Turn the music up.
Turn the music up real loud. I'm trying to tell you, the music don't work.
It don't work.
I know firsthand, just it doesn't work. I've, like, like I said, God, like, watch it over me, because I've driven when I was tired and stolen off, and you go, whoa, like, oh, yeah. My God, like, it scares the heck out of you. That will scare you into just being like, I'm not
even sleeping anymore.
Yeah, right. And so it's knowing that you're not, or knowing that you're human, you're not a superhero, you're not a Superman, you're not a Superwoman. Like, if you need rest, get rest. Take a now and now, in this day and age, you have tools. Before, they had taxis. Sometimes I know taxis are annoying. I get it. They got Ubers. They got Lyfts. Whatever you want, they got for you to say, "Yo, I'm gonna leave my car here. I'm just gonna take an Uber because I'm tired, or I drink too much, or whatever your reasoning is." Do that, right?
Absolutely agree, man. Absolutely agree.
Have to happen. They don't have to happen. They do, right? You don't have to text and drive. You don't have to drink and drive. You don't have to be tired and drive. Like, you don't have to do those things. Now, if an accident just happens and two people are just, sometimes obviously those things happen, but these type of things do not have to happen. It's our arrogance that makes it happen.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And that's the unfortunate part where things like this happen. But what I will say to you is, you are someone that, when they say make lemonade out of lemons, like, you have made, like, superior lemonade. Like, you have made the best lemonade anybody probably has ever had out of your out of a situation, bro. And I just want to say, one, thank you for one still being here, because lots of you know a lot of people sometimes things happen and they go down a bad path.
Yeah, absolutely.
And next thing you know, they're no longer here. And
don't thank me. That's all Big G.
Yes, sir. Well, yeah, well, at the end of the day, we thank God for you. You know what I'm saying? But it's also the drive, the perseverance, and the will to want to do more and to want to bless people and impart your knowledge into them. And I know that they've learned a lot by your testimony. And I can appreciate the vulnerability of even telling your story.
Absolutely.
Some people might move on and they say, I don't want to relive it. I don't want to tell it. And that's their right. And that's their prerogative. Mm-hmm. And if that's your process, this it's no slight on you.
Yeah.
But props to you for saying, I'm going to turn my test into a testimony. Because
for sure. And you mentioned what you said also, like, I speak at so many different events. And like when I speak like business conferences or business endeavors, when you take I'm talking about turning lemons into lemonade. And, you know, I say this quote when I talk to like a business savvy audience, I'm like, turning lemons into lemonade is easy. Anybody can do that. Children mm-hmm. do that. Mm-hmm. But have the business savvy or the cognitive mindset to not only have lemons, have something sour happen to you. It's not about turning lemons into lemonade. Take it from me. I didn't turn lemons into lemonade. I took lemons and planted the seed and started a lemonade business. So it's two lemons, three lemons, you know, can make what one pitcher of lemonade. No. Take the seed, plant the seed, and then make gallons of lemonade and start a lemonade business. Take something bad, figure out how to turn it into a positive, and then figure out how to monetize it.
And that's a whole bar. I like that, man. Yeah. And you definitely made a lemon business. You definitely have ESPN, College Game Day, over 400 schools, high schools, colleges, and businesses. Mm-hmm. You've made a name for yourself. You always have made a name for yourself. Now it's just in a brand new arena. And they always talk about the man in the arena. You are the man in the arena, man. And you're doing some amazing things. So the next thing that I want to talk to you about is, where can people, you know, find you, right? If they want to book you, if they want to buy your books, if they want to see your story, if they want to read about you, man, where can they find all this stuff, man?
Absolutely. They can find me, you know, all social media platforms, but if you go to just FletcherCleaves.com and roam around, you'll see my Instagram, YouTube, the AT&T commercial. I recently did a TED Talk, which was a phenomenal opportunity for myself. CBS interview, which they did a great job on that. And just go to my YouTube. You can see different presentations that I've given. You can see a wheelchair nomad episode that was filmed in Mexico. And we had a phenomenal time doing that. You can just check out a lot. You can see the truck I drive on my YouTube channel. You can see so much stuff. So just go to FletcherCleaves.com, roam around. Find my social media from YouTube, Instagram, Facebook, and just, you know, hit me up or contact me for different booking events. Or if you just want to tell me your testimony, you know, I'm definitely, people think, and it's kind of humbling. I try to keep myself humble, but like, because I've been on different TV shows and, you know, all these different avenues, people think I'm like unreachable. So like, I'll get a message or an Instagram message or a Facebook message and I'll respond. And I was like, oh my God, like you really responded? I'm like, yeah, what do you mean? I'm sitting at the house chilling, watching TV. You know, and it's just like, but you know, and so I definitely respond to all my messages. And if I don't, send me two messages and please let me know your testimony and how I can help you within your journey.
Man, that's dope. And you said that that you're driving a truck now. You said that you're driving a truck now. Oh, you out here rolling. Oh man, like you. Yeah, okay.
Oh, yeah, man,
check out that truck video, man.
I took city transportation from my parents. I live with my parents. They stay on the outskirts in the suburbs. So I was taking city transportation So a 25-minute drive taking the city transportation was taking me like 2.5 hours to get. Because, you know, they got to make stops and do this and jump buses and jump all that fun stuff. I mean, you're from New York. You get it, right?
Yeah. All
and,
too well.
And then, and then my parents was taking me to school and taking me places. But then they, you know, like I said, they older, you know, they just watching them break themselves down and still like, hey, mom, can you take me to this party or whatever, right? Or, and my parents don't want to stay up to 10 o'clock, take me to the party, you know?
Yeah.
So, you know, of course,
I'm 3 a.m.
Is that, or just even having my home, like, that's why I had to move out, like, because I joined a fraternity, Omega Psi Phi.
Okay.
And so, like, having my frat brothers drop me off at 2:30 a.m. and they're still breaking, you know, they're older, they're breaking their sleep and, you know, all that stuff. And so I was like, yeah, Fletch, you got to start driving. So if you want to, the family has sacrificed so much for you. If you want to repay them, gain your independence, move out, start driving, you do your thing, you know, whatever the case may be.
Wow.
So yeah, I got a pickup truck, driving, be whipping that thing.
Man, Tennessee, man, I've heard some amazing things about Tennessee. Definitely have to get out there one time, man. Whenever I'm in the city, I'm gonna definitely come check you, bro.
Yeah, man, please hit me up.
So definitely appreciate you for taking the time out to do the show with me today. Very much so appreciate it. And I really want to encourage everybody to follow. You know, the links are gonna be right here in this video of how you can contact him, connect with him on all social media, YouTube. The links to the book is gonna be right here. You know, definitely implore you guys to go out and support, follow. Share his story, because it needs to be shared even more than what it is now. And it's always about continuous support over here. So one last thing. What's next for Fletcher Cleaves?
Man, I'm gonna be honest, man. Like, you know, this has been a tough year for me so far. So I'm just trying to regroup, revamp my business, and, you know, currently going through a financial hardship. So I'm trying to make ends meet. So please, if you're looking for somebody, a speaker or whatever, you know, just COVID kind of really messed up the game, man, as far as the speaking opportunities, because, you know, things were taking off, rolling, whatever the case may be. But now, even though it was, you know, 2 years ago or a year ago, you're still trying, people are still, you know, still trying to get the ball rolling, So, what's next? I'm just continuously trying to do my thing and get back on top to where I know I can be and the speaker I know I can be and accomplish all my goals. I want to move to a larger city. I've always wanted to move outside of my hometown just for a year or two. So I've been trying to do that. That was my plan this January. But of course, Big G had different plans. Things kind of went left. So I had to revamp my whole mindset and all that stuff. So I'm just trying to just keep on keeping on, man. Just keep speaking and keep being a testament and keep traveling the world.
And that's great, man. And no matter what the trials and tribulations are with you, like, you one person, I'm never going to worry about, man. Like, I know that you're going to push through and you're going to persevere, and you're going to be good on the other side of this whole thing. And if you guys are looking for a speaker, man, look no further. Fletcher is here and available. Book him, have him on your shows. You know, like, let's definitely get the word out, because his story continuously needs to be told, especially in this generation, with technology and things like that, man. So again, Fletcher, thank you. I appreciate you for coming on the show. And this has been another episode of Conversation of the Heart. It is your boy T-Till. See you next week. Peace.